For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Thanks for listening to the Von Hessler Doctrine podcast. Remember, you can hear the show every weekday from 9 to noon right here on 95.5 WSB, Atlanta's news and talk.
Live from the heart of Atlanta, Georgia, and beyond, hour one of the Von Hessler Doctrine begins right now. I am your lovable, huggable, mid-morning chat host, Eric Von Hessler. The other voices you hear are the doctrinaires. Man of a thousand of those voices, Tim Andrews. Lady of 184.5 characters, Autumn Fisher. The man behind the glass, Shaney B. And the handsomest producer in all of producery, Jared Yamamoto.
How are you doing, man?
Wow, you seem kind of down.
Yeah, how you doing, man?
I thought everybody'd be excited. Big sports night for Atlanta, isn't everybody's, the Hawks beat the crap out of the Mavericks. I don't know. So I thought you'd be excited. It's the first game of the year coming off that big, deep playoff run.
Oh, yeah.
Longest, deepest playoff run in Atlanta Hawks history last year. We didn't know how it was going to start, but what was that, like 113-83, a blowout? So I would imagine everybody in Atlanta is waking up. Every Atlanta sports fan is waking up. Did I miss something? In a really good mood?
It was good to see Trey.
I'm just trying to toss a little levity out there.
It was good to see Trey beat Luka. I will say that, because he never beats Luka.
First of all, you saw that. You read about it afterward. You were suffering with me and the rest of the community.
Watching the Broncos lose?
Oh, yeah, Thursday Night Football.
Hey, that's another thing. I mean, isn't everybody waking up this morning going, hey, Case Keenum, not so bad.
Not so bad.
Did I miss something? No, that was, boy, that was rough last night. I don't know. Is it rougher, like, if you... In some ways, to me, when you get blown out, it's almost like you throw it away.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I felt bad for Max. You know, he was, just see him in the dugout after they took him out. What was that, like the bottom of the fifth or something like that? And, boy, just that look. That look. It was just like steely. It's like, you know how he feels, you know, because he had the chance to go out there. He's a great pitcher. And he's going to continue to be a great pitcher. And I believe we are going to get to the World Series. And
mentally, two more games. It's not. Don't panic.
And well, the cool thing it's because it's in Atlanta sports. You know, we were up 3-1 to the Dodgers last year.
Yeah.
And
at a neutral site, though, I have to keep telling everybody. I get in Twitter fights about this.
No, I'm not believing this. I'm not buying into this. I don't think that's going to happen again. I'm just let's tap into what is in the back of people's minds. The Von Hessler Doctrine, you know, we're here for reality. And the reality is, I believe the Braves are going to the World Series. But I also understand that we're all a little bit, first of all, scarred by being Atlanta fans in professional sports all the way around. And even in college football, sometimes the thought the Bulldogs were going to do some things that they didn't end up doing. But this year, I believe they're going to do it. So we have that, we're scarred. We're scarred, and we went up 3-1 last year. It didn't work out.
We're smarter.
Exactly. We are smarter. I'm smarter. I'm scarred, but smarter. We'll find out by Monday if I'm smarter. But I think I am scarred, but smarter. And
rough Monday morning.
You know, it's a weird series, isn't it? It's a weird series because the Braves kind of dominated them on their bullpen game. And then the Dodgers dominated us on their bullpen game when we had Max Fried out there, who we use. I mean, when's the last time you lost a game? Even
it's been a lot. It's been a while.
So that was rough. But you know, the Dodgers, you know, they're not gonna. I said this before. They're not gonna roll over.
Tip your cap to Chris Taylor. I mean, he hit three home runs. I mean, listen to this.
Uh-oh. That's deep left center. Chris Taylor
Oh, great. Look at the night of his life.
The night of his life!
Everybody who came up to bat for the Dodgers, it seemed to me like the commentary was, oh, boy, he was having, boy, it was rough in the regular season, but he's come alive in the playoffs. Yeah. Oh, thank goodness. Good for us.
Him just, and Cody Bellinger.
Can you just stay in a slump for, I don't know, another week? Just one
just
more
2 days.
Week. Two more days. That's all we need. That's all we're asking.
But it will be awesome on Saturday. You know, it would be cool to win it at home, and I do think the Braves are still positioned in a good spot. You know, you have Ian Anderson pitching on Saturday, and then Sunday, potentially, Charlie Morton. So the Dodgers don't have an easy path.
We'll talk to Peter Moylan a little bit later about it. Sometimes he gets, I got to be careful with Peter Moylan after the Braves have a bad one. He gets a little testy with me, I think.
Comes they on. Had 12 Fosters last night.
He comes on. He's like, I know. I get the feeling sometimes of Peter Moylan that he thinks that I think it's all over, but it's not. I'm an optimist.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a complete optimist. I believe the Braves are going to the World Series. It would have been nice to have kind of taken care of it and got it done with last night. But, hey, that's what, as I often say, the other team gets paid to. They're paid to do their job, and that's what professional sports is all about.
It's called fishing, not catching.
Right.
Speak for yourself.
Whatever that means. I don't know what that means. Is that going over my head?
I'm just trying to participate.
Oh, okay. All right. I thought it was.
Yeah, you know, people are out there giving 110%.
Thank you, Autumn. First of all, I excluded you from that conversation because I am a known, on the record, trying to reform myself, but no doubt about it, misogynist. And because we were talking about sports, I acted like you didn't ever watch baseball, which, of course, you don't. You don't ever watch. Okay, so in that case, I'm not a misogynist. But I do want to hear, do you believe that the Braves are going to the World Series?
I think they're going to make it. And you know what? If they don't, then they're gonna do their thing. You know, they're out there on the field. They're giving it their all. You know, Freedy looked good last night.
Freedy, that'd be Freddy.
Freddy.
Yeah, we don't have Freedys. We used to have a Freedy. He was a manager, kind of.
I know where you're going.
I just got that.
Hey, well, thank you for our female sports correspondent, Autumn Fisher. We appreciate that. We appreciate you. And quite frankly, we all think that you're smarter and better than the rest of us.
Oh, hands down.
Did I get out of that?
Yeah, I think so.
Uh-huh, fellas.
You've satiated me for 20 minutes.
You feeling good? You feeling good?
Feeling good.
I want people to feel good.
How's my hair? Do you like it?
I'm afraid to say that I think it looks wonderful.
Oh, well, great, because it looks bad. Thanks for lying to me.
And your butt does not look fat in that outfit. You look great.
Oh, thank you.
You're canceled.
I want it to look fat, though. You know what I mean? Like,
no, is that what you want?
Yeah.
I was going to say.
Thick.
I was going to say hefty. Hefty. Hefty.
No, hefty is not the right word.
The trash bag?
I used to know a guy from Canada, and he would say things like, she's got a big toilet.
What? She's got a hefty dumper.
Or I say, oh, she's got a nice toilet. It's like, how do you think in terms of erotic with the word toilet?
How do you not?
Well, I see.
I want to take a plunger to it.
I have been exposed to the websites. Apparently, it does happen. So. Yeah. Just not
a
my
bottle brush
case.
In there? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, clean it up. All right.
I'm going to put you on the spot on this
Get
one.
Get the stains out of there. That's sexy. Yes.
You know, there is a possibility for...
Hold on, but let's not pretend that it's all bad. I don't know if you saw that Hawks game. I know it's the first of 976, but look good as a team.
That's right.
Collins had 20. Took a while for Trey to warm up. He ended up with 19. So what does that tell you? When they win, what, 118 to... What did they win?
I think it was like 118 to 89 or something.
Yeah, whatever. 83, I think, something along those lines. That tells you, okay, that's a team effort. That's a team effort.
So they're going to win the division and go on to the playoffs? When will we know?
Well, the first game that matters is Christmas Day.
Okay.
So we'll find out sometime next year. But, hey, better to win the first one than lose it against that Luka Doncic. Is he listening?
His name is Luka.
His name is Luka, and he just lost at State Farm Arena.
Now, my question for you, Eric, is there is a possibility now for special Braves programming on Saturday with the loss last night. So can I get you on the record to do the special programming for the Braves?
What are you doing? Are you working for my program director?
No, not at all.
Are you supposed to work against me? On Saturday, I'll be watching the game from my home. Why am I put on the spot here?
So you're going to be watching the game?
This is my love. No, he wants me to come out to the park.
I think you're fine. We get to hang out.
Why would you go there?
What?
I'm just saying, you can stay at home.
What I'm saying is, what he's trying to push me into is, I think WSB is going to be there.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Well, then that's a reason to go, but you know, it is kind of expensive.
But I mean, you know, the way that I look at it, we do like 17 hours of programming here during the week.
Sure.
You know, and I do enjoy
What, you got to perform on your days off?
Yeah, what's that all about, huh?
You got to tap dance for the man?
Did Johnny Carson used to show up for supermarket openings?
I'm going to the U.S. Open. I won't be here.
Yeah, meet some fans. Maybe turn some people on to the Tonight Show that haven't heard about it.
Yeah, there's four channels.
How dare you put me on the spot like that?
You don't have to answer.
The official answer is maybe.
There you go.
Say you have a doctor's appointment and you can't talk
about it. I don't have a doctor's appointment, but I do think I do have to meet my grandson for the first time.
Yay!
You got the T-Dap?
I'm getting it.
All right.
Oh, we're getting it today?
I'm getting it.
Hey, we're getting it today.
Yeah, we're getting it.
Cool.
Yeah, together.
That's right.
You know, my
one needle.
My best friend, Jared. Yeah, we're sharing needles now. We're
used
to it.
We just put it through the arm. You just position the arms in such a way that both needles go through.
No, three juices, just, one needle.
It's just like with our heroin habit. Yeah. You know, we're used to sharing needles.
Oh,
it's not a big deal.
You're fine. Yeah. Nobody ever was hurt by sharing a needle.
All right. Now she has to go that far.
Yeah, man.
My children were listening. That, ladies and gentlemen, that was humor. That was not real. The Von Hessler Doctrine is officially on the official up, saying, kids, do not share needles.
Von Hessler Doctrine. Love it. Listen to it every day. Best show on the radio.
Weekdays 9 till noon on 95.5 WSB.
And if people are tuning in expecting Alec Baldwin jokes, that's not going to happen. They don't trade in personal tragedy. So what happened? A prop gun? This has happened from time to time. I know Brandon Lee, the son of Bruce Lee, but he was joking around on set, right, and put it to his head.
No, that's John Eric Hexum. The gun that was used, John Eric Hexum from the Voyagers, that early 80s TV show and stuff. Brandon Lee, it was a prop gun that had a different kind of bullet lodged in it, in the barrel, and it killed him.
So we know this. So my only question, so if you don't, if you haven't heard the story, Alec Baldwin shot with a prop gun, which, do they have to be that potent given all the abilities and technology and post-editing now? I'm not going to understand, maybe back in the old days, but so the director of cinematography was killed.
That's right.
On the set, and the director of the movie hospitalized. I don't know how, you know, what kind of danger that person is in. So for me, the only question about it is, was he playing around when it happened, or was it accidental discharge, or while shooting a scene that it happened? You know, because if he was just playing around, and that's going to end up in a different place. So that's just,
I've read
just
conflicting
tragic
things. I'm not even going to comment until
I read
something.
Well,
I
mean, if somebody gets on Reddit and says, I was on set and I saw this, you know, maybe they were, probably they weren't, who knows? Obviously, it's a set, so there were people there who saw it, and they have access to social media.
I mean, you can deduce that Alec Baldwin didn't go on set that day hoping to kill someone.
No, absolutely not. Yeah. Absolutely not. But also, we do know that there is danger with these things, and you are told, anybody on a crew is told that you treat it like a real firearm. You consider it to be loaded and dangerous, and so that's the only question. The question is, you know, whatever you do for a living, and you do it every day, the dangerous things don't appear to be so dangerous, because every day you go in and nobody can use these things. And so that's, to me, the only question. Was there some messing around, some joking around that ended up deadly or not? That's really the only question.
It's surprising, too, because I know that on TV sets, if they just even have a candle in the scene, you know, it's this huge deal, and actors have to have meetings about, like, candle fire safety and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. I mean,
know, it's surprising that something like this could still happen.
Yeah, so we don't know. We don't know exactly what went on. There have been no official things. I mean, Alec Baldwin was cooperative, immediately went down to the sheriff's station, gave his thing.
Imagine how horrible he feels.
Well, I mean, he's a polarizing figure. So
yeah, but still,
I mean, I'm just saying, he's a polarizing figure. So in this society that we live in, the people who disagree with him politically are not all of them, but there's going to be this social media group that is going to jump on this because I hate this guy, and so I want to, you know. But it's he's a human being, and if it was a total accident, he's going to feel awful for the rest of his life, and that's a very human thing. We'll find out more as we go along. No need to speculate. It was either totally with it while making the film, or, you know, if he was joking around and even as a joke, and then it became deadly, that's still that's going to put it in a different place, but we just don't know exactly what was happening.
Yeah, to your point, I mean, he is the number one trend on Twitter on Instagram, and of course people are immediately jumping to conclusions when, you know, like, this just happened. I mean, it's
social
horrific.
Media is a place where dumb people talk to dumb people, so there should be no... Stop being surprised that what goes on social media is idiotic, whether you're on the left or you're on the right. If you're on the left or you're on the right and you use social media to get your news and information or to get your points across, I'm sure you're a nice person. Intellectually, you're not to be taken seriously. You should know better. So the only thing worse than idiocy on social media is people who feign, you know, outrage. Oh, did you see what this idiot? Well, it was on social media. I would be surprised. Surprised that it would be news if it wasn't idiocy. What's it going to take for? I guess it's an addiction, and people have to go there or whatever. It's not one that I share. My addiction's always the same. You know, sex. That's other than that.
hands down.
You know, sex and gummies. Other than that,
and Excedrin.
Excedrin is a
Excedrin.
That's a palliative. That's Excedrin. Yeah, to me, it's an aphrodisiac. It doesn't seem to work for other people, but you know. So we all have
our. If I don't have a headache, I'll get horny.
We all have our addictions. So I guess I should be kinder to those who participate and engage on social media all their life. The same way I wouldn't be cruel to a heroin addict, right? I'd be caring, right? I'd know that they were an addicted person. So I think the people who engage and expect that they're going to have real conversations on social media, I shouldn't mock so much, right? Because they're clearly
it's an addiction.
They're addicted to something that I'm not, you know? And so it's easy if you're not. I mean, I wouldn't. I never check social media. there's a fear of missing out. Not for me. It never occurs to me that I would want to go there and, hey, there's a scrum of idiots over there in the corner and they're throwing shoes at each other. You want to throw shoes?
Here you go. Here you go.
I guess some people enjoy throwing shoes at each other.
Or tell me about it. A guy in Iraq guy threw a shoe at me.
The first.
I ducked.
Good reflexes.
Damn right.
Good reflexes.
And then I painted him.
With all this sports going on yesterday, I have only seen little clips that we have, audio clips of the Biden town hall.
Oh.
Is Anderson Cooper, I mean, honestly, just some of the stuff that I've seen.
You mean Gunga Din?
Anderson Cooper, I got news for you. When the president's struggling, your job is to stay silent. Your job is, you have nothing in your job says you have to help the president out. Now, I'm not saying I enjoy seeing the president struggle to get through his answers, but he was elected, he's the president, and we have a right to see how he answers questions. Why does Anderson Cooper, and by the way, I'm not complaining, he wouldn't have done it for Donald Trump, and he shouldn't have done it for Donald Trump. It's so easy. It's so easy to be a good reporter. It's very, don't care who wins. And treat every president, no matter what their rhetoric or party is, exactly the same in your coverage. It is so damned easy. Why do they not do it? I wonder. So I had to catch up with the Braves game last night. Because Dune was released on HBO Max at 6. So I decided to go down into my... And I have to emphasize my rinky-dink ghetto theater. Now that I realize that there's a lot, there's a lie on the internet that I'm worth $11 million.
I mean, to be fair, between 8 and 11 million.
Right, which is only between 8 and 11 million more than I'm actually worth. So when I say that a theater, it's a projection against a big wall, but it looks nice, you know. And I'm sitting on an old couch. They're watching it. I'll give you my review of Dune, because that's what this show is all about, movie reviews. Mm-hmm. But on my streaming service, when you go to a live game that's going on that you've missed a little bit of, you can catch up in key plays. And so I did that, and so there were 8 plays, and boy, did it start out well. And Freeman's like, oh, this is going to be great. It got me to the 8th play, dropped me down, I think, at the bottom of the 3rd or something, and which, like, immediately, uh-oh. And then in the 5th, I knew, okay, that's, in my mind, I thought, okay, this is not the night. Mm-hmm. You know, once Freed was pulled in the fifth, and then who came in for Freed and immediately gave up a couple
Chris
of
Chris Martin came in
yeah,
after
Yeah, not
him.
Immediately. He actually threw a couple of really nice pitches, and things were looking
From
good.
Coldplay?
Wasn't it two outs? Yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah. Yeah, this guy does everything.
Yeah.
I think there were two outs already, right? And then when that happened, I was like, let's go see what's happening on Thursday Night Football. And then I came back and I
And you tuned into a good game that was going on.
That was a good game that went on. But then finally what I decided was, you know what, I think I'm gonna be awake tomorrow during the show. I don't want to be a bad fan, but it's going to take a lot to come back from this one. And it would be wonderful to wake up in the morning and find out, wow, my goodness, and all
we're
that.
World Series bound.
Yeah, yeah. So,
hey, the good thing, though, about this is that, you know, for the longest time, the Braves never celebrated on their own turf. And for the first time, I think this is the first time in a while where in the division series.
Mr. Optimism, listen to him over here. It's a better thing not to have wrapped it up last night.
Yeah,
I like
exactly.
This. Mr. Glass half full.
In the division
He's cheering
series.
Cheering up Atlanta.
He is. He cheers up. He's the Atlanta cheerleader.
I texted Greg last night and I said, "Where's Jared when we need him?" Because you weren't tweeting positive things. And
that's
I
true.
I
was doing double duty last night as well. Yeah, so I was taking care of business.
He was pretending that he's live in Athens on Sunday.
Hey, good morning, Athens.
Are you still out here on the? Is your podcast on? Not podcast. I'm sorry.
Well, it's a radio show and a podcast.
It's a radio slash podcast show. Is it? Does it air on WSB as well?
It is on. You can get it online on WSBRadio.com.
What's going on? What's happening here?
Uh-oh. What do you mean?
Well, weren't you on WSB?
I had been filling in for a while, but I have not. I don't have a slot on WSB.
Well, my goodness.
He fills in for Word on the Street when they fill in for Aram.
Right. But what happens in Athens? How you doing? You number one?
Number one.
Yeah.
Number one now for about
against.
Autumn, what is with you?
I'm Bill Fackleton. This is the Farm Report now. Some bitch, Jared Yamamoto.
I'm changing the channel.
Aaron Rodgers was talking the other day, I think, about Autumn when he said people who like to be joined in their miserability.
Yes. Uh-huh.
Oh, Jared, I love it. I'm just teased. We all tease Jared, and then I do it, and then I'm villainized.
It just seems a little rough.
Sounds
rough.
Like hate.
You. Oh, yeah? Who are you up against? The Farm Report?
I'm just playing, Jared.
I was going to invite Autumn on next week. You know?
Yeah, I wouldn't do that. She'll just trash everybody.
It's too small potatoes for me.
Oh. Yeah.
I mean, she did deign to appear on Radio Labyrinth we recorded last night.
Oh, did she?
Oh, were you recording your little thing last night? Not little, sorry.
Wow.
I'm sorry.
I wasn't recording
my
private. I
leaned back in my chair and folded my arms.
Yes.
And why? So you were on, Autumn appeared on Tim's podcast, Radio Labyrinth, to push the fact that you had an appearance on Alan Sanders' podcast.
The Wilder Ride.
Which is all about Gene Wilder movies.
For the most part.
Or Gene Wilder.
This time
it was about Halloween movies.
Yeah.
Just in general.
So we just started. Okay, so the Wilder Ride is it's a pop culture podcast.
Mainly focused on the films and career of Gene Wilder. But they also talk about pop culture in general.
So people should go get Radio Labyrinth because Autumn is on there talking about
Whet Your Appetite.
Alan Sanders. Then you go to the Wilder thing and you get the real deal. And all the way along the way, everybody in Atlanta that wants to feel good and optimistic is downloading the PowerPod.
That's right.
But if you're
if you want to get into the psychobabble, you can get into one topic.
You're in, that's right, yeah, psychobabble between ex-lovers Greg Russ and Autumn Fisher, but somehow they still get along, and they do their show, One Topic. I can't quite figure out what that's
about. Our connection is unbreakable.
How many shows have you done of One Topic?
Almost 200, I think 147.
Only 147?
Got to be running out of, 147 is not almost 200, it's almost 150.
Yeah.
So it's further away from 200 than 100.
Yeah, but still.
It's almost 1,000.
150.
Oh, 147.
Yeah.
167 for PowerPod, by the way.
Okay. All right. Well, they're catching up.
Excuse me.
But here's the thing.
Yeah, but you have fill-ins and stuff.
They only have one topic. They got to be running. How many topics are there?
That's true. I mean,
well, so far there's been 147.
Have you done the thing about we're losing our bees? No?
Ooh, there you go. Apiarists? That'll be the topic.
You know, I could just, if you want to pay me to be a consultant, I can just like, I just pop a gummy and just call you and, hey, what about this?
Eric, I would love to have you on the show.
Printer ink.
But I feel like you would say you wouldn't do it. I don't know why.
Why? I did it.
Would you do it?
It depends. Is it like, is it going to destroy my Saturday afternoon?
Of course not. It'd be awesome.
Well, you could just
have a great time. We're old friends. We could talk and talk and get into stuff.
Who's old friends? You and Greg?
Me and
all of you.
Oh, me. Okay.
Daddy?
That's right. I have
daddy.
I'm your radio daddy.
I mean, daddy.
It'd be perfect.
I mean, daddy.
Air Addy.
You could tape one topic with Greg and Autumn. And then come do the Braves broadcast after. It'd be a perfect Saturday.
Yeah, it would be like working 6 days rather than five.
You've done Radio Labyrinth exactly. twice, by the way.
I agree. We've done it twice, and I've never been invited on at all.
Drew Barrymore has not been invited on.
Oh, no, I'm Grimes.
Are you Grimes? Grimes has never been on.
No, Drew Barrymore is totally different.
That's right. So
I'm never going to forget that. Twice.
I want to get into a little bit of this. So the town hall, the nonsense.
Oh, boy. 90 minutes Joe had it to go.
Yeah, Tim got he went over there. He told me that there was a lot of times, what do you say, like Joe Biden, sorry, this microphone's all over the place, but Joe Biden, he was just standing and staring like he was gripping rails that weren't there.
Invisible ski pole. He was just...
I said that to you, right?
Yeah, his fists were clenched.
Yeah. All right, I want to know, why does Anderson Cooper feel that he has to bail the President of the United States out?
When 40% of all products coming into the United States of America on the West Coast, go through Los Angeles what am I doing here?
Is it Long Beach?
Long Beach, thank you.
What am I doing here? What am I doing here?
That's your job. Anderson Cooper's job is to help him out.
Thank you, Gunga Din.
I mean, it's just so obvious that it's silly. It's just silly. It's just, I guess it doesn't matter, right? I mean, there's a business plan. There's a model. If you're CNN or you're Fox or you're MSNBC, and you're not really, no one's interested in being, you know, not that Walter Cronkite was any kind of saint, but I just mean no one's interested anymore in being considered trustworthy, honest, just straight down, just the facts, ma'am kind of thing. No one's interested in that, and as a capitalist, I guess I just have to admit, well, there are economies of scale, and that's not what they're in the business of, and I should stop being an idiot and keep reacting to the fact that this is not reportage. This is not a town hall. A town hall is you walk in there, and people are going to ask questions. You don't know who they are, and if somebody acts like a damn fool, you get security, you kick them out. But for the most part, as a politician, when you go into something called a town hall, you should know, I need to eat my pasta, get my rest, and bring my A game, because stuff can be coming from anywhere. It's supposed to be not like having a press conference in front of the White House press. Because you kind of know, you can read their stories, you can know what they're thinking. Oh, this reporter is really big on this. But the idea of a town hall is, you just don't know what these townspeople are going to ask about.
These crazy townspeople.
When's your dope bookstore going to open back up?
And also, if there's any usefulness in the town hall idea, back when we at least pretended that these were real exchanges between politicians and the citizens, the idea is maybe the politician walks out of there, wow, I didn't realize that this is what people were worried about. I walked in thinking that this other thing was going to be the real thing, and I get three questions on what I thought was a back burner issue, and there's supposed to be some back and forth, some engaging. So I know I shouldn't overreact. CNN is an entertainment news service, just like Fox is, just like MSNBC is. And so they use terms like town hall. And I've got to stop being an idiot and reacting to, well, that's no town hall. Well, I've said, of course it's not, because that's not a news network. Neither is Fox. Neither is MSNBC. They're news entertainment outlets.
It's an infomercial.
Well, I don't even know about that. I just think that they're news entertainment outlets. And they will say the things, and they will report the news that doesn't necessarily go to their narrative, but they report it once or for one day, and they move on. The stuff that goes with their narrative, they report and have 95 roundtable, boring, whatever. I don't know how you people watch this stuff. I have no idea. Yeah. I don't know how you could tune into the 5 every day and just not see that, oh, they're going through the motions. Yeah. I just don't. But I guess people are entertained by these things, and that's just what this is. I mean, it's supposed to be a town hall, and the can we agree that we're still pretty much a 50-50 country? So the idea of CNN's idea of fairness is seven questions from Democrats, two from Republicans, two from independents. One of the independents obviously leaning toward Democrats. So really, eight Democrats. That's the idea of fairness. You know, it's like if you look at these news entertainment outlets, any of them, like if you go to Fox, if there's five people at the table, one of them is a liberal. If you go to CNN, if there's five people at the table, one of them is a conservative. That's not balance. By the way, none of them should be identified by their politics. You should have smart, interesting people who disagree. If you want to have a conversation about things, just have smart, interesting people who disagree. But that's not what it's all about. Here's one he went off. I don't know what he was talking about.
The statistics go that if you come from a home where there's no books in the home and a single mom or a single dad, they're not well educated, they don't talk a lot. The kid from a average middle class home versus that home will go to school having heard 1 million more words spoken than the child who didn't. A gigantic disadvantage.
Mr. President, the question was on the community college, which was a big campaign promise that you made. You talked about that along the campaign trail.
Yeah, and I'm going to get it done.
What are they clapping about?
Yeah. What are they clapping for?
What is the clapping for?
You know that I'm going to get it done.
I'm going to get it done.
They're like, good try. You know.
What happened there?
Look.
I mean, even Anderson Cooper, he's still trying to help him by getting him back on
course. Yeah, he's trying to get back on track. Yeah.
You can't help him.
Mr. President, the question was about your dinner last night.
That's what I'm talking about. Look, if you eat a lot of rice, you're going to get why I'm going to get done.
Look,
you did a good job with the windows, Anderson. I got it from here. Your dad, he built back better. Build back better.
I make big money now. I'm the president.
Big money now.
You bought your Anderson
windows? I get
windows?
My windows from Anderson, whose dad is...
Build back better.
His mom with her jeans. It's simple, folks.
But we'll be back. I need a stronger microphone. The arm. Weak.
Bring it into my office. I'll make it a little bit stronger for
you. Yeah, I'm having microphone dysfunction.
Yeah.
MD. I need an MD for my MD. Can you help me out?
I can help you out.
All right, we have your chance to win a pair of tickets for a guy that Tim Andrews tells me was not much of a fan of Eric Von Hessler.
Now,
that's
listen.
Okay. Hey, it's okay. Everybody doesn't have to be a fan of the...
Rat him out there, Tim.
But
specifically say that.
This guy, Steve Hofstetter, is a very funny comedian, and he's appearing at the Buckhead Theater on Friday, October 29th. And if you are caller number... Let's make him work. 17.
Dang it.
To 404-872-0750, you'll win a pair. Tickets are on sale right now at livenation.com. Congratulations to Amanda Hamilton of Marietta. She won a pair of tickets to see Steve Hofstetter at the Buckhead Theater on Friday, October 29th. Didn't win, it says here. Didn't win. Tickets are on sale now at livenation.com. Autumn, I got the book that you sent me.
Yay! Awesome. Is it what you remembered?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that, now this is the original, and it came out in 63, and I think the cover that I had was different. Or, let me take the, you know what it was? Mine didn't have the cover. I didn't have the jacket.
I always take the jackets off of mine.
This is what I remember. Remember I said blue? It's not really blue. It's a deep blue.
Okay, cool.
This is the book we were talking about the other day. Hey, look at the guy who wrote this book.
Yeah, you want him talking about your kids.
W.W. Bauer.
Yeah.
He couldn't lure kids into his office to talk to them about sex, so he just made a book.
I wrote a book that if you read it, it'll be very helpful for me.
This is
guys,
the book. This
here's
is,
how you be a
guys.
Guy. Guys, moving into marriage. Yeah.
This is the
Let
book.
Let me help you move.
That my mother, who, you know, my mother, I think, and I was reading through this yesterday, and I think my mother fancied herself a modern thinker, you know? And this is pretty wild for 1963. Even though if you read through, first it's called Moving Into Manhood, and it's the book that my mother gave to me when I was 9 years old to teach me about sex. Only problem is I was nowhere near puberty when I was 9 years old. It was still a good, I don't know, 24 months before I was even going to have my first whiff or notion or thought. And I guess she wanted to get ahead of things. And so when I read it, it just kind of freaked me out because reading it now, I can see that you're supposed to give it to a kid just as they enter puberty, a boy, and just as your brain's going, oh, what's going on? And I guess it would be helpful for that. So moving into manhood, W.W. Bauer, M.D., for boys in their teens. Yeah, did my mom not see this? I guess because the jacket wasn't on there, she didn't see that. I was 9. For boys in their teens, a noted doctor's common sense guide to sex education and growing up. The foreword by Morris Fishbein, M.D.
How's he? What is he?
Yeah, it says, now you can give your son the benefit of the warm and sympathetic advice of a noted doctor about sex and the emotional and social problems of the teenage years. The only problem was I was 9.
Too
just
soon.
Freaked me out a little bit.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be appropriate for today's youth.
Well, here's the thing. Although in 1963, this would be a radically liberal approach. I mean, people did not talk about things like this, even with their 12 or 13-year-olds, normally. I mean, they were... this is the opening foreword, Morris Fishbein, M.D. First words of the book. Boys have what Kinsey calls erotic arousal. It's like in 1963, just giving this to your 12-year-old and that kind of talk was wildly liberal. But there's an awful lot in here that would get old W.W. Bauer, M.D., canceled in 2021.
He's wrong.
Because he is very liberal and open about talking to your kids about this sort of thing, but the standards of what it was for, who you do it with. They even discuss in here marijuana use.
Wow, and really?
How, yeah, and how it...
is your son a jazz singer?
how it will lead you to do foolish things that you wouldn't otherwise do in your right mind, and some of that being sexual. The chapter "A Partner for Marriage" would get this guy canceled.
Uh-oh.
He talks about basically do a background check. Come from a good family, good religion, good birthing hips. I don't know.
Can make a casserole.
So I appreciate that my mother felt like, you know, see, we're a modern family here. It's just a couple of years too soon for me, that's all.
Well, you turned out all right. I'd say that book, you know, was a foundation for you.
Book. At the time, it just freaked me out. And it almost, because there's a part in there where it describes how your parents get so close together that things happen. And I remember, I could still remember reading that passage at 9 going, huh?
Which had more influence, book or a wee?
Once I got to OU,
Owie,
yeah,
which I once, because I was tall, I could buy stuff, magazines like that by the time I was like 15 or 16, and the guy still sold it to me. I remember saying, hey, could I have could you give me an Owie?
There you go.
You meant we?
Yeah, it's OUI. Hey, can I have an Owie? Might not be 18 years of age if he refers to Wii magazine as Owie. Yeah, sure. It was a different time.
I was going to say, does this book anywhere say that people shouldn't have any smells? And
that's where you got that. You know what? I haven't gone back through it completely, but I will find out if that had that much
If her odor is pungent.
On my sexuality. This guy. Can you imagine that this guy?
Oh, yeah. No, he
bring your son to my office. I'll sit him down and explain to him moving into manhood.
Yeah.
You see this right here? That's erotic arousal.
The way that he described in this book how babies come to be, it almost seems like accidental. Mom and dad get so close together that this happens. And they go,
whoops.
Baby. But we need to take a... put this on our Facebook or whatever.
Okay.
I'm not much of a social media guy, but I do want people to see the great WW. This is my first sex therapist, this guy.
You need to talk to your wife.
No, he just looks like, you know what I mean?
Body is changing, young man.
This is 1963 science looking guy. I mean, this is nothing. Why do you assume that there was something weird going on? You know,
well,
it was a different time. You had the Kinsey report and people were opening up.
Where are you on the Kinsey scale?
I don't even know what that means.
The Kinsey scale is a sort of spectrum of sexuality that everyone falls on. So if you are more to one side, then you're more heterosexual.
Let's say
if it's a scale of 1 to 10, right?
Well, what is it? You're talking about the scale. You should know what the scale is.
Well, it's not a number scale.
It's a sliding scale.
Oh. I got
you know, it's where, well, maybe I play fast and loose with my, you know, sexual preference.
Hey, you put me on the spot. Where are you on the Kinsey scale? First of all, the Kinsey scale itself, if you're just talking about sexuality in terms of heterosexual or homosexual.
That's all I'm talking about.
That would be tossed out now because we know there's like a billion other things.
Well, I'm just simplifying it. There are many scales
I'm
of
not
all
a simple person.
There's many scales and spectra amongst all
spectra.
Types of different
Did you hear
parts
that?
Of
spectra.
Our personality.
Yeah, that's just like a great way of spectra is a good way of saying more than one spectrum. Oh.
It's the way to say more than one spectrum.
It's the best way as far as I'm concerned.
Like media and medium. Media is many.
If there is a scale, and I think I have heard of this, if there is a scale, is there a test to find out? Or do you just go, I think I'm a 7?
I'm not sure.
Give you a bunch of pictures and check everything out. And see.
But hook you up to these electronic nodes.
It could be like what you say you feel versus your brain response.
He's aroused.
I don't care
what he says. Well, that's what they say.
This kid's clearly a 7 or higher.
Men who are, studied under an MRI and are very vocally freaked out about homosexuality, typically their brain will respond in a sexual way.
How could it?
Well, nothing gets you more horny than an MRI.
Yeah.
Well, maybe it's not MRI. Maybe it's like a brain scan.
But you're talking like you know what you're talking, and then now you're saying maybe.
Well, I don't know how they do I've never had an MRI. Is that what it is?
Yes, it's a very loud machine, and you're immersed in it because, they do have open MRIs, but it's a tube.
I've been in the open ones where you're on that little sliding table that goes
Why
in.
Why have you guys had MRIs?
Yeah, I had one too. I remember that.
Why?
What?
What's wrong with you guys? Why have you had MRIs?
Because I tore my shoulder once.
The latest time I had an MRI was when I was having what I thought was kidney stones, and they wanted to see. And then I got a whole thing where, they thought, this organ is slightly larger than it should be, and this one's slightly, but you just look at it and go, I guess no red light. I guess I'm okay.
Yeah.
They look at your organs and tell you your organs are okay.
Jared, why'd you have it?
And when I was a kid, my mom was really tall, and so I had to stand on top.
So she bought an Owie magazine?
I had to stand on top of the toilet in order for her to dress me, and I would extend my arms out, and I would let her dress me. And one day, I just lost my balance, and I fell, and I hit my head on the bathtub, and I had to go and get an MRI.
What a goofball.
And he's been a pleasant boy ever since.
Yeah.
That's what
Hey, Miss Psychobabble, I think has really gotten onto something there. Your optimism has to deal. Y'all, all your boyfriends are great. Yeah, it's great. Daddy number 7 is great. Oh, mommy number 2 is great. Everybody's great. Well, I don't know. You got to explain the scale to me a little better.
All right,
I tend to believe that is true. I have heard that. Everyone's sexuality is really more on a scale, and that very few people are at completely one end or the other end. But I've only heard it as kind of a notion. I don't really know what the science of it is.
Oh, it's a real thing.
Do they ask you the question, or it's like that pain scale when you're a kid.
Oh yeah.
What would your pain be, a 7 or an 8?
Yeah, gosh.
Or do they actually do a test on you, like an IQ test or something? We were supposed to do or no thanks.
I'm interested in this.
I'm interested in everything, but I got to know how the test actually works before I can answer for Tim Andrews or myself or you. I think you're an 8. Just sexy as hell. See, Autumn keeps talking about these scientific things, but I don't know. She's just texting me. So it looks like, is that a scientific term? So it looks like
I'm casually texting.
So
you.
It looks
I'm not
like
writing a paper for you.
The Kinsey test is not actually a test. It's a number given to you based on your sexual history. But what if you don't do any of the things that you've thought about? I mean, I'm asking for a friend. Hey, Shaney B, let's do this.
This is interesting.
Or
No, thanks.
All right, real quick here, a little lightning round of this. Jared throws stories at me, and I will respond with either...
I think I speak for all.
This is interesting.
I don't know who that other voice was, or...
It's in your head. I didn't
know.
Thanks. Was that voice in my head? Did
what?
I hear that?
Well,
I heard
what?
Something. Somebody heard something. All right, hurry up. We don't have a lot of time here.
Real quick.
Lightning round.
From Pitchfork.com, ABBA has shared another new song from their new record, Voyage.
This is interesting.
Do we have some of it? Have you heard it, Tim Andrews?
I've listened to both of the singles that they've put out. And you know what?
Do you
they
like
could
them?
Easily have been on their final album, Super Trooper. They're not the poppy mid-70s song.
Oh, what, did they get all psychedelic or
conceptual?
No, that was
more they're very ballad-esque.
Oh, so it's not like Waterloo or
Fernando.
No,
they're nothing like that. They're not powerhouses of pop, but they're good.
Okay,
their voices are great.
What is this one called?
This one's called Just a Notion. Here you go.
That's kind of poppy.
Yeah.
Still more Super Trooper to me.
We're talking about oceans.
I don't know them that.
Notions.
I don't know.
I know their albums. I celebrate their deeper.
Yeah,
cuts.
No, you're into the deeper cuts. That's that sounds like it could have come out in 82 or something to me.
Yeah. That's
they were kind of done by then.
Yeah.
By the time MTV came along, they had already been done.
Yep.
They were just huge from like 75 to like 78 or something, 79.
Last hit was Happy New Year.
Don't remember that one. It's the same stuff, right?
I didn't get that same, all that production that was in those 70 songs.
Oh, they're known for their production.
Yeah. You could tell they couldn't speak English. They were just singing phonetically.
ABBA was one of those bands that, as I got older, I realized how much other musicians appreciated them. I just thought that they were just kind of like throwaway pop at the time. It was not
huge
a big deal to me.
Songwriters.
Yeah, I mean, there's like, but then you see like, you know, like the guys in Black Sabbath. And, oh, I love ABBA.
Yeah.
The way they put out, what? Huh?
I thought I was supposed to hate them.
Foo Fighters, when they built their own studio, they built it based on pictures of ABBA's studio.
Really?
Yeah. So they're very well respected in that. So.
Did he have the other? Do you have the other one?
I don't have the other
one. Yeah, the other one's a kind of a dirge, but.
Oh, you like the dirge? Is that the B-side? Is this a single?
There's only two. There's so far. There's only been two on Spotify.
What is a dirge? I don't know what that is.
A dirge is a kind of a slow,
funeral,
murky,
a slog.
Slog.
I forget the new terms. What is the song? Is it lid or is it fire? What is it?
Banger.
Oh, a banger.
Is it a banger?
They're opposite of a banger.
Opposite of a banger.
Well, that kind of sounded like a banger.
Lame.
You think that was lame?
No, I liked it. I actually did.
It sounded like ABBA to me. Now,
sounded a lot. It sounds like really ABBA.
I'm an ABBA
They still
freak,
look pretty
so
good. Have you seen them lately?
Oh, yeah.
They're going out on tour, but they're sending out avatars. Like, I never saw the Gorillas. Didn't they used to do that, where you would go see them and they'd be cartoon characters singing? Like the singer from Blur, and then, who's the other singer? Gnarls Barkley, wasn't he in it? Or no? Was it CeeLo?
I don't know the answer to that. I wish I did.
You never seen
I don't him? Think that he, I don't think CeeLo was a part.
No,
of
but wasn't it Gnarls Barkley?
CeeLo is Gnarls Barkley.
Okay, well, there you go. But I think there was the guy from Blur. And remember that song, Clint Eastwood?
Yes.
Yeah.
So, but that was, I think when you went and saw them, it was just their projected cartoon characters that would show up. This is going to be more like holograms. But isn't that going to be weird to go to an ABBA show? It's like, how excited are you? Yeah, I'm going to see ABBA. Well, I'm going to see their avatars. Like,
will they be performing these live or is it pre-recorded?
I think there's a band that's live. Okay. It's like going to see like the Ronnie James Dio thing, I think, sort of. Except that this is actually a living band. They are alive somewhere.
Yeah.
They're just not in the room that you're in that you paid the tickets to see the live show. Is this what's going to happen? Like, I saw a guy talking about this on YouTube. Like, in the future, like when all the Rolling Stones are dead, are they still going to go on tour like this? Interesting. But at least, you know, they're dead. I mean, ABBA's sitting around in a cabin somewhere, not in the room you're in, performing in front of you. So, yeah, Gorillaz. I'm looking up on Wikipedia. They were a virtual band. And CeeLo was not in there. I thought every member was a cartoon version of a known musician. Because I knew the lead singer was from Blur. But it turns out the guy that I thought was CeeLo was Russell Hobbs, a fictional American musician and member of the British virtual band Gorillaz. He was totally made up. So.
Wow.
There you go. You learn something new every day. You see this? I want to let people know that I'm, I've been enjoying this morning. Oldie-timey pretzels.
Wow.
Yeah, I got these out of the snack machine, and I'm thinking, yeah, these are just like the pretzels that, you know, back in the 1800s, people used to get out of snack machines. Oldie-timey.
You heard a calliope playing in the background.
Yeah, yeah. Not only is it oldie timey, but time is spelled with a Y.
Well, that makes it
even older. Yeah. Oh yeah, Mrs.
Freshly.
Freshly.
Yeah,
that's
you forgot.
Right. I forgot, Mrs. Freshly.
Oh, honey.
She's 122 years old.
Now I'm the one that's supposed to forget.
I understand that. How you doing? Do you have the oldie timey honey buns?
I mean, I don't use that phraseology, but they certainly are oldie timey.
It's 120 years old. This Mrs. Freshly still every day delivers every honey bun to every snack machine in the city.
Well,
it's amazing.
At my age, you don't require a lot of sleep. I go to bed around 6:30, then I wake up around 7:45.
And then you're off.
P.M. Yes. Still in the p.m.
Mm-hmm. And then you're off. You just start restocking.
I just get in my kitchen.
Snack
and,
machines.
It's got a big
being
old truck.
In that kitchen reminds me of when I first heard WSB over the airwaves.
Yeah, 1922.
And what I mean, literal airwaves. I was in my kitchen. We didn't the radio was
they
out
came
in,
her teeth,
in the
they?
Living room.
No, how'd you get the radio? Was it through a pot or a pan?
It was from the cast iron. That's right. I was in the kitchen. Yeah. And I heard somebody talking, and I knew Mama was in the back room. And I said, Mama, I heard somebody talking. And she said, that's that new radio station. We put our ear to the cast iron, and we laughed and laughed.
So, and it is a known fact that when, at first, in 1922, was it that we went on the air?
That's right.
It was
100th birthday coming
up. We were blasting at a frequency that was a little too much. Had to be pulled back. We were coming through
people.
I would
lay down in the bed and hear it through my mattress.
We were figuring things out. We didn't know.
Yeah. Well, look, she's lived to 120, so it did no harm. All right, let's do this.
It's time to go down by law with George Stein.
This is where we bring in our doctrine lawyer. The lawyer for this show, George Stein, and we try to get to the lawyerly underpinnings of some of the stories of the day. Some of them pop culture, some of them legal. George Stein, how are you?
Doing well. I hope you are good too.
I am. I'm doing quite well. I would like to know. I'm going to start with a case that's going on that I cannot believe, George, is not in the news more often. It would appear to have everything that's needed, fraud, hypocrisy, sex, a sociopath at the center of it. I'm talking about this Theranos and this lady who used to walk around fancying herself as the female Steve Jobs. And she got a lot of people to buy into this new technology whereby she claimed that just by taking just a little finger prick of blood, that they could do all kinds of testing that normally you would have to have a whole bunch of blood taken from your body. And it turned out there was just a whole bunch of fraud involved. And so are you following this case at all? Because I find it fascinating.
Yeah, well, you know, she's in big trouble. You know, she's facing several counts of fraud. There's several, you know, claims or criminal claims. She misrepresented her machines could do with a little drop of blood. And
apparently they were doing so. She would say this, and they had a thing going with Walgreens. Listen, she got a lot of investors. I don't know if Warren Buffett was involved. Rupert Murdoch was an investor. George Shultz, didn't he just recently pass away? The former Secretary of State, I think his money was in there. Like, she got all this old money to buy into her plan. And then, apparently, for a little while, they had Walgreens involved where people would get the blood test, a little simple from your finger blood test. And then, I guess, the allegation is that back at the lab, because they would also take more blood. I don't know how this was done, but they actually used other people's machines that were already known, and then they'd send the results back as if it was from their new technology, right?
Yes. So, you know, that's she totally misrepresented what her machines could do. And a lot of those investors that you mentioned too put in well over $100 million of their own money.
Yeah, she raised $1.3 billion in funding. And that got her, I think, another billion in financing by having that. So and it's a fascinating case. So you think it's a slam dunk, right? I mean, she's going down for this, right?
Yeah, they even have some of her private texts that they've got their hold of, you know, showing that she sort of has that mindset that she walks on water above the little people. And
we'll just take the money
and figure out the machinery later, you know.
Yeah, and then there's these other layers that are going on this, where she worked with this other guy who helped her out. Nobody in the company knew that they were lovers, apparently, but they were lovers. This guy's named Sonny Balwani or something like that. And so I think then she, by the way, I believe in my eye test, she is a sociopath, I think. And so once she realized, tell me if you've seen this kind of thing happen before in cases, once she realized that she's probably going to be found guilty, then she started to turn it against him and say that he controlled her and there was some abuse involved. And is that a likely way for her to try to realize, you know, maybe somehow I can mitigate how many years I'm going to do here if I can share the blame with somebody else? Whereas he goes on trial, I think, in a few months.
Sure. Well, you know, whenever you're in this big a trouble where you're facing, you know, this many penalties and this much jail time, then the finger pointing ultimately starts beginning, you know.
Yeah. She's accusing him of, like, mind control or something.
Sure. So, you know, so she was hypnotized by him, so to speak, and he controlled her mind. And then, you know, then it speaks to that she didn't intend to defraud all these people and misrepresent.
Right. And if you she's an interesting study, Elizabeth Holmes. I remember watching her. There used to be a station, a network. They ended up calling themselves Tech TV after a while. First, they were something else, ZDNet TV or something like that. And so she was kind of coming up. I was watching that a lot, and she was kind of a big rising star. And the first thing that should have been a clue is that she kept dressing like Steve Jobs, you know? So she would present herself as the female Steve Jobs. She had a very distinct voice, very husky. It would be surprising.
She had like a real deep voice.
She had a very soft look, but then her voice would be like this. And in my reading of this trial, there's some thought that she actually made up the voice.
Yeah,
but
that was an
affectation.
Family friends of hers said that it was made up.
Yeah, I have to wonder, George, and I'm not a conspiracy guy, but this story, it seems to me, has everything. It's got a TMZ element. It's got a Silicon Valley element. It's got a soap opera element. There's sex involved. There's all kinds of things. And I have to wonder if it's not getting more play because of all of the powerful people who are taken in and made to look like fools by her. Yeah. No, I mean, Rupert Murdoch, he gave money, and he owns Fox News and Sky News and Wall Street Journal, although Wall Street Journal does obviously cover the story. So there's not a lot to say, except for me to say to people, if you want to look at something interesting, go look at this case. Go look at this. Do you see us? What have you been in court and thought, you know, that person is actually a sociopath?
Well, you know, it's a combination of that, and she's very good at PR because she knew how to promote herself, husky voice and all. It's like some of those rock and roll stars that have a voice just for their stage time. And
well, Michael Jackson, there's some people who knew Michael Jackson who said that whole high-pitched thing was all phony baloney. Like behind the scenes, being like, look here, you get me the right contract, right? I don't know if that's true or not, but I suppose that it's possible. I just find it fascinating that people could be taken in. And there's another little part, and this is just my theory, speculation. A lot of the money that she raised based on her ideas came not only from super wealthy men, but super wealthy old men. And I just wonder if there wasn't some sort of charm involved, you know, like she's
sweet talking him.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, absolutely. Because I do believe that we'll find out that she's a sociopath. Is that a defense, by the way that like temporary insanity or something? Can you defend yourself as clinically you are found to be an actual sociopath? Would that help at all in sentencing?
No, that would not mitigate what you're facing if you're a sociopath. You know, I think that probably would hurt you. So, because you know, sociopaths do things with intent and premeditation.
Right.
So, and a lot of times their heart is not in the right place. And now that they have the text and everything, and they have an inside view of what she's really like, I think she's really going to get nailed. So.
Yeah, it seems like the text are going to hurt the case that she has trying to say the other guy, Sonny Bulwani or whatever, was controlling her mind and her life, because in the text she's saying she's very she's driving this bus. You can tell in the text he's part of it. And then the question is how early did he know? Because a lot of people who worked there didn't know. And then I think part of the trial is a lot of people who worked there, I started asking questions, but people for a while worked there and thought that the stuff was real that was going on. It's a little bit like the Enron story in the beginning. There's a lot of stuff in the beginning of the Enron story where, you know, they would bring people, reporters in, and people who worked there were told, act like you're doing something. They didn't have hardly anybody, so they would just have, like, people at their computers typing away, typing nothing, so that when investors walked by, it's kind of the same type of thing. But so you look for she's going to be found guilty would be your guess. And what kind of years do you get for this kind of fraud?
Oh, you know, she'll probably get at least 5 on a volleyball camp. And so.
Yeah, yeah. And, she's not going to Rikers? You tell me that? She's not going to Rikers?
No, I don't think so. And definitely they'll make a movie in the future.
Yeah,
they've already cast her.
Yeah, they're making a movie now, aren't they?
Yeah.
Who's going to play her?
They're probably making more than one. The one I've seen right now is that Kate, the blonde lady Kate from SNL. The lady does all the voices.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. What's the AT&T? The Verizon?
Yes.
McKinnon, right,
yes.
Yeah. That might be Netflix. I think there's a documentary on Netflix. I watched the
documentary.
Was it decent?
Yeah.
Do you get the idea that she's a little bit of a sociopath?
I mean, you get the idea that she certainly was good at convincing people.
Yeah, manipulating.
And I think she just looks a certain way.
Yeah.
And doesn't look too good.
I think.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, serious enough, but still.
Yeah.
But she dropped out of Stanford, I think, when she was 20.
Did she say she was like a professor there?
Yeah. And then just started this company, and they've got Rupert Murdoch and all these old geezers who enjoyed being invited to meetings. Give all kinds of money.
Looking at
the
her.
Series is called The Dropout, and actually McKinnon dropped out, and now it's Amanda Seyfried. So.
Oh, there you go. Well, there'll be plenty of movies down the line because it's a fascinating case. We'll be back.
The Von Hessler Doctrine.
It's so improv and so real and so funny.
Weekdays 9 till noon on 95.5 WSB.
All right, not a lot of time, George Stein, but Kanye West got his name changed officially. It's to Ye, right?
Yeah.
No con. The con is over. It's just Ye. And this is my question to you. In general, how hard is it to change your name? What is the process very quickly?
It's very easy. You know, you have to publish it ahead of time and put the public on notice that you're going to do it, so it's not some sort of scheme to defraud creditors. And as long as nobody objects, it's pretty easy peasy. The court will grant it. So
matter of just paying the money. And,
yep.
And what is public? I imagine in the past that was somewhere in the classifieds or something, but now that newspapers aren't what they used to, can you still use those?
And some online publications, you know, that nobody looks at.
So. There you go, yeah. And you can always point to it. George Stein, we are out of time, unfortunately. Tell the good listeners how they can get more George Stein.
Well, Eric, we've mastered the art of two things.
Hell
representing
yeah.
those charged with DUI and those who are injured in motorcycle accidents here at Steel Horse Law. If you want a quality lawyer standing next to you in your time of need, call us 404-522-1000.
All right, man. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Hour 3 of the Von Hessler Doctrine begins right now at this very moment. Whether you like it or not. No sense crying over spilt milk, folks. The glass has been toppled. Deal with it and live with it. I was thinking to myself, you know, if this Elizabeth Holmes was a Silicon Valley sociopath, liar, scam artist, surely at some point she gave a TED Talk, because that's the home of scam artists. Nonsense. And of course she did.
This is Ted Med talk.
Yeah, so she's, we found, well, just the beginning, and then we'll bring in Greg Russ because I think he'll enjoy this. But and supposedly, she's even making up this voice. She's dressed up like Steve Jobs. She used to go around and presenting herself. She is a college dropout who a couple of years is raising millions, billion dollars for ideas because she apparently had a way of with words. And I don't know if it's true or not, but people say that she even made up the voice because she has a very soft kind of looking features, and then this voice comes out. But here's your typical TED Talk nonsense.
I believe
Boo.
The individual is the answer to the challenges of healthcare.
Stop. Stop right there. Right there. That is everything. That's every TED Talk. She said nothing there. It is such gibberish.
I believe that the individual
yes.
is the answer.
I believe
the
individual is the answer.
Yeah. The individual is the answer to healthcare.
Yes. Elizabeth Holmes. I believe that our next doctrinaire that is going to appear on this stage has actually been at TED Talks or TED Talk-like things or followed one of these morons around. Let's do this.
He's a misanthrope, he has a dark heart, and he needs a good psychiatrist.
New York.
It's Greg Russ with stories from Studio B1.
Greg Russ, do you believe that the individual is the answer to healthcare?
Of course.
Yes.
I think about that constantly, and that's the conclusion I've drawn.
It's just such empty nonsense. It sounds like you're saying something so profound, but
people buy it, and they pay big money to see these things. It's a shame. I mean, TED Talks have been around for a while, since the 80s, and obviously with the internet, and they became more accessible.
I did not know that. I didn't know that. I thought that they were a creature of like the 2000s. I didn't know they'd been around that long.
Now, the first TED event, I think, was 1984.
Oh.
But even going back to 2008, this is when I discovered them. And I know they were around, you know, people were watching them before that. But I didn't feel as though they were as empty as they are now.
Yeah. Well, because I think what happens now that they're online is people see them, and then there's this sort of copycatism that goes on. Like, didn't you tell me once when you were doing your little video thing, maybe in one of your freelance jobs? Didn't you follow one of these morons around who the TED Talk types? He told me he was like, we need to play more games or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Quite often
that. This was a guy who invented an interface where you could turn, like it was electrodes, and you could turn bananas into a keyboard. So,
which, by the way, is solving a problem that we've had for a very long time. Why can't I use a banana as a keyboard?
you took these alligator clips, and you could clip them to anything, and it would send an electric signal through there, which would go through the interface, and you know there was a computer. But yes, so this guy's sitting there, and he's playing different fruits, and he's really full of himself. And at some point, he just pulls out this wad of cash, like rolled up $100 bills. So obviously, he's made a lot of money doing this, but he's also dressed like a bum with a tie-dye shirt that's three sizes too big. And we go to his house at some point, zero furniture, and he has a wife and kids. There's like one chair. It's just they're living. I don't think it was a choice to be minimalist. I don't know what was going on, but you know he.
Do you think it was a show? Do you think the other part of it was maybe a show?
I feel like part of it was he talked up these pinball games that he had created all day. So you got to see the pinball games, and so I was thinking that he actually created pinball machines or he restored them or changed them. We get there, it's a piece of plywood with nails in it and some rubber bands, and the flippers are just two pieces of wood that you turn with your hands. This is not what you sold us at all.
And this guy gave a TED Talk.
I also went to the actual TED event in Vancouver for another shoot, and the people there are insufferable. Yeah. And I think this is, you know, whatever the number of TED Talks was in 1984 probably was not as many as today. There's a lot more content they need to fill. So that's happening also. But
do they make money in some way? Is there a way that is there a TED Foundation that somehow makes money?
I mean, the tickets to go to the big event are very expensive
to
get in. But you know the way people buy into it, it just is now a status thing. I went to TED. What did you learn? I don't know. It doesn't matter. I was there.
I'll tell you what I learned.
I believe the individual is the answer to the challenges of healthcare.
Absolutely. The individual is very important, and we need to pipe into the individuals who will help us learn and grow our healthcare system.
I want to follow her. I go, hey, listen, that lady's totally wrong. I think big, soulless corporations are the answer, if you ask me. I'd be saying more. I'd be saying something that's understandable. Yeah. Hey, by the way, Greg, I have to ask you, you sound a bit under the weather. Do you have a cold of some kind? You sound like a voice actor doing Charlie Brown or something.
Yeah,
what's going on?
I was, yesterday it really started to hit.
Uh-oh.
COVID. I don't know, Eric.
Uh-oh.
I've been wearing my mask in my car.
Yeah?
So I shouldn't have COVID.
Yeah. Can I tell you something I saw yesterday on Peachtree, a person walking down the street with a mask on. And I'm just thinking, do people believe that it's just hanging in the air waiting for you to walk through it? Anyway.
I thought that at first, but then I did the research, and I found that it's actually not something you can get from the air.
It's the individuals.
It's the individuals that are the answer to our health care.
Thank you, Lizzie. Thank you for that.
Hey, let's not talk down. It's Elizabeth.
Thank you.
I know she sounds
like
Fred.
Don't you hear my low voice that makes you respect me in some way?
Gotcha, Lizzie. Gotcha.
Yeah, I'm going to give you a lot of money. I'm going to give you all my money. You're obviously a genius.
Thank you so much.
She figured out the cadence in the presentation, and that's all it takes at this point.
Yeah.
You don't have to say anything. To be good at it, you just mimic what has been done before. This has happened with, you know, NPR. Everyone who presents the same exact way now.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yes.
We saw a man in, we found a Republican in the Midwest that doesn't hate everybody. Quite interesting. They get together
at a gas station.
Yeah.
Beep, beep. Yeah, a full service station. So you get the ding, ding. When
ding,
when
ding,
the car
ding,
pulls
ding.
Up.
Well, I get you.
You hear the footsteps running to the car, and they start wiping the windshield, filling it up, the old beeping and clanging of the gas pump.
Hey, have you had yourself checked? I know you get checked for COVID all the time. Are you going to get another?
Well, this is the thing, right? This could be just a regular old cold or whatever.
Sounds like a cold.
Sounds like COVID.
Because I don't know. Does COVID, there's been so much information, but is it still supposed to start with a dry cough? Remember in the beginning, it was a dry cough. That's how you know.
Well, we don't know.
Dr. Fauci. Because to me, it sounds like you're stuffed up.
Yes. And I didn't really have a cough. I did have a sore throat.
Uh-oh.
Can you smell things and taste
things? No, because I'm stuffed up.
Oh. But so my mom thought she was just having allergies, and she found out she had COVID. So it could be like a sneezy, nasally thing.
What about your girlfriend there? You're living for the first time. The guy moves in with somebody, and then he's got to unleash this hell on her.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she had it several weeks ago. I'm just going to reveal her medical history.
Oh, yeah. Hey, HIPAA.
Hey, it's a HIPAA violation.
Yeah. We don't know
I
believe you shouldn't reveal your girlfriend's healthcare specifics.
Thank
my toes were hurting. And I said, uh-oh, toes are hurting.
Oh, yeah, that's supposed to be another one.
I made that. I mean, I know that was one of the...
No, it's blue toes. Is it like blue toes or something like that? COVID.
I stubbed my toe. I might have COVID.
Elizabeth Holmes, is it the toes?
It's a very important thing that, you know, when you bend your nail back a little bit because you jam it into something, that could also be a sign for COVID.
Okay, I got you.
You believe in that, right?
I believe
that
the individual
if you burn
toe.
Your tongue on something hot, you may be susceptible to COVID.
You know, another thing they say at these TED Talks that wows everybody, I believe we're going to disrupt this industry.
Yeah.
And how do they hey, you know what? I've seen 7,000 other people say that, so I'm just not going to take you seriously.
Most disruption doesn't work. It's hard to disrupt things.
Yeah.
Something like Netflix was a disruptor, and it worked for them. But for the most part, you disrupt a big industry, you're not getting too far.
Elizabeth Holmes, she's going to disrupt the blood testing.
Yeah, no. There's a lot of money to be made on many vials of blood. The healthcare industry made $50 per vial.
Yeah,
and I'll tell you what's cool.
Reason why they took me down is because I was getting the information off of just one drop.
And now you're going to be disrupting prison. Take all your ideas. Yes, Greg, quickly.
Volleyball.
What's cool is that stage they built. That's really cool for the TED Talks.
Oh, yeah. I expect Robert.
It says TED in the back.
And the risers and the auditorium, the whole thing they put together. That's cool. Anyway, this lady that you're talking about, she reminds me of an ex.
Really?
Yep.
Well, we'll take a break. We'll come back. And hey, we've already revealed the HIPAA-covered details of your girlfriend's life. Now let's go after an ex when we return. Christina Edwards gave us the heads up on this, and it turns out to be true. This Elizabeth Holmes from Theranos fame. I brought up, this is a little bit like the beginning of Enron. Turns out her father, Christian, was a vice president at Enron. Isn't that interesting? What a surprise.
No big deal.
I'm sorry, Elizabeth. Yes, no big deal there.
Yeah, so, NBD.
Greg, you were saying that Elizabeth Holmes' voice reminds you of an ex.
Not the voice.
Oh.
Just the presence.
Ah.
In the eye. If you look at the eyes, it's in the eyes. The way she carries herself, the way she's able to convince people of other things.
Now, in my life, I've known you since you're about 19. And so that's
a little over
20 years.
Yeah, Eric, don't be reductionist to Greg, okay?
I'm not. No, it's not that one. It's not that one, I don't think. I think it's probably...
It's the one you blocked. It's the one that makes you hate.
Oh, really? You know what? I would have thought it would have been the one who broke the back window of your car out with a baseball bat.
Oh, I mean, I could also see that, but no. The
maybe the problem... Wait a minute. The common denominator here is you, pal. Well,
of what?
Well, I mean, you have one... the fact that you had one sociopath... Oh, it must have been that girlfriend who ended up taking a baseball bat and knocking the back window out of his car.
I don't think she was a sociopath.
I'm just saying, if anybody was, it would have been that kind
that
of
one
behavior.
Was.
And no, but it was the one that really
now
I didn't
a therapist.
Know that. Oh, really? She's a therapist.
Oh man.
Oh wow. Oh wow.
I was saying on the couch.
It's like Jared's friend who's like a socialist. I think MSNBC is right wing, and he's a he's like a teacher of children.
You're right in the fact that I am a common denominator. Not for this reason. The bashing in the back windshield, that's the only time that happened. But overall, the way the relationships kept playing out in the same manner, it's like there was only one thing that was constant in those. Me.
That was you. Even with Autumn. We don't want to get into that. Listen, this stuff is too deep and too hurtful on a Friday, I feel.
That one wasn't my fault.
I'm going to leave that one. Hey, listen, this is not your therapy session. That starts at 12:30. The show only goes until noon. But wow, so it was the one that I blocked. You think that
that's...
Yeah, that's why I made that little quote. So
watching this.
Yeah, I'm getting your jokes.
You watch the documentaries, you watch her interviews, it's there. It is her.
Yeah.
And it's something I don't put past her. Like, my ex could have pulled something like this off.
I never really bought into that girlfriend of yours. I have to say, she did kind of have an act going on. And I won't get into it.
But it was
spellbinding. A little bit, but and let me tell you something. When Greg first fell for her, this is how much he fell for her. This is how much he fell for her. We were in the car, stuck in the first snowpocalypse, luckily only about a mile from my house, and we had to leave my car on the side of the road because it just couldn't go anywhere. And it was just too slippery. You couldn't go anywhere. Everybody was just, I don't know if you remember that day when that freeze came down. So about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we were right in the middle of it. And we walked back to my house. And later that night, he walked back to the car and somehow managed to get through 400 to go see this particular girlfriend.
I don't like spending the night out. I had the Airbnb. I wanted to spend the night alone in my own
space. Yeah, but it was a natural event that had happened. It was like
That car had all-wheel drive. That Subaru was wonderful.
This is a lie. If you can remember 400, what that looked like that night.
I maneuvered it.
You did.
The other fools didn't know how to drive in the ice.
The reason you maneuvered it was because you were...
driven.
You had a human drive.
You were driving the car, but you were driven back to Atlanta.
That booty influence right there, Greg.
That happened, exactly. And now, he says, I don't know, it's kind of like, well, this is Elizabeth Holmes. So she had the same spell that she cast upon all these 80-year-old billionaires that she talked out of money.
I think that's a similarity. It is a spell that's been cast.
Yeah. That's when I realized that, man, when you're horny, you'll do anything.
That's not what it was about.
I don't know if you remember what 400 looked like that night. This guy was driving my car through there. It was four-wheel drive, so.
Yeah, manual. We kept it in
low gear.
Easy.
How long did it take you to get from Roswell to the city?
Once I got to 285, it was clear back into the city.
Okay.
But to get to 285 from your exit, 3 hours.
She had a hypnotic hold on him. All right, that music
any stories?
We got no stories from Studio B1, but I thought we had a fine conversation.
Okay.
All right, you have yourself a great weekend.
You too.
So as if this tragic Alec Baldwin story wasn't strange enough, now there's a a new piece of news, and it comes from IndieWire, and it's they're quoting from the union. So the same union involved here that was just in the news almost.
Yeah, they were going to strike.
They were going to strike.
This week on Monday, they were going to strike.
So it's the IATSE, is that it? Mm-hmm. Union? Mm-hmm. So they released a statement. I don't know why you wouldn't know, but if you don't know, Alec Baldwin was filming a movie. I guess this happened yesterday. And prop gun went off. We don't know if he was joking, but we don't know. But it's saying now that they were either rehearsing or filming a scene. And so that was the news up to now, is that a prop gun went off. The director of cinematography was killed. The director of the movie was in the hospital. Now this comes out from Local 44 of the union IATSE, which covers prop masters. This is from IndieWire. Sent an email to its members early Friday morning that said the gun used in the scene contained a live round. And the production's prop master, the person on set who would be responsible for the gun, the production's prop master was not a member of Local 44, which is the local of that union. And I think it's being shot in New Mexico. So I've never been on a set like this. And I guess I don't really understand prop guns. I thought that on the outside they look like real guns, but on the inside they're not real guns. Now I'm being told by Tim Andrews, no, they're just fake bullets get put in them, and those are blanks, so that it can still discharge and come out the other. I would still think that you could create that in such a way that no real, you know, like how you can't accidentally put diesel into your,
right,
you know, like the thing doesn't fit. Like I would think that you would.
But even without a bullet being in there and having it being a blank, it's dangerous, because we talked about John Eric Hexum, yeah, the guy from the Voyager show. He put it to his temple, and the flame is what killed him.
Right.
Well, and the blank is really just a modified bullet.
Yeah, but right, here's the thing. You can throw all that away. It was a bullet.
Yeah.
There was a live round. That's what that means, right? I'm trying not to get... If you say there was a live round, that means that was a real bullet that was in there. And the prop master... I can't go too far here, but for one reason or another... This is a union job, and the guy who was in charge of that was not in the union. I don't know whether they'll go anywhere or not, but it seems pretty strange. I've never been on a movie set like this, and obviously there's people listening now who know about it, that because we make an awful lot of these we do a lot of these productions here locally. But it just seems to me, why is there any reason why a live round would be in a prop gun? I mean, what would be the... Could it be a mistake?
A very tragic mistake, or on purpose.
It's somebody's real gun.
Yeah.
And you remove the bullets and put in the blanks.
That's right.
So if it's a mistake, it was a real gun and there was, I thought I removed the bullets.
But why would there be a bullet in it to begin with?
Shouldn't the blanks look nothing like real bullets? This just seems very, very odd. And having nothing, it would appear, none of us thinks that Alec Baldwin went to work yesterday thinking, I'm going to do this. So, I mean, if that turned out to be the thing, then we would just all be blown away. I mean, I don't care if you like him or you don't like him. I don't think anybody thinks he went to work, I'm going to go do this. So if a live round ends up in there, I mean, maybe there'll be some perfectly understandable reason that will come out. But I can't... If there is a possibility that a live round could ever be in a prop gun, I would ask, over 100 years into cinema, why would that still be the case? It just seems to me like a prop gun, people should make those so that on the outside they look just like the real gun that they're supposed to be, but on the inside, you can't put a live bullet in it. It just seems like that would be a no-brainer.
I think that there have been a lot of talks... in the industry about, especially with, like you talked about earlier, with computer graphics being what they are,
right,
that you can just put an explosion, right, sound and look at the end of a gun, because the guns that they use are just actual guns, and then the blank is just a bullet without the tip. So there's really not that much of a difference.
Or it seems to me, I mean, also, maybe that would look goofy or phony or not real, maybe, wherever the technology is. But it just seems to me like you should be able to create a gun that on the outside looks like a gun, and that if you put a blank in it, it will work and the whole thing looks like a gun. I didn't know that prop guns were guns. I honestly knew they weren't water pistols, but I mean, I just thought that there was an industry that created these guns that look like they're real and they only use blanks.
That's what I thought too.
Inside a blank though is gunpowder.
Yeah,
it's just it's really just a.
I know that, but yeah, and what you're saying is what I thought this was when I came in. Obviously, other actors have been killed by blanks, but to find out that it wasn't a blank,
yeah,
that there was a live bullet in there, I just can't understand how that would be any. How does a bullet get on the? I have no idea. But then again, I've never been on one of these sets. Obviously, a lot of people who work here locally have been, and they probably understand this more than I do. But your mind kind of, there's two pieces of information that come out of this statement from the union. There was a live bullet, and the person who was responsible for that prop gun was not a member of the local union, which then your brain starts going, I'm not going to go there, but we'll find out. But
or he just forgot, and it was a terrible mistake.
But that's what you, I mean, I just as a prop
but that's
master,
your job.
What, you just bring your own gun? I don't. Yeah.
And then two people?
Yeah.
Well, I guess
I would understand one mistake.
Well, No. It wasn't two shots. I'm pretty sure it was one shot. But, you know, a bullet, it can go through one person and then graze another person. It's probably something like that. It was one shot. It wasn't two shots.
That's one hell of a live round to put in a gun
a
movie.
Well, what I'm saying is nobody, there's never supposed to be a, there's no right kind of live round. That's what I don't understand. You know, once you put a bullet in a gun and you're at close quarters, these people, the actor, Alec Baldwin, can't be far from the director of cinematography or the director. I mean, there may be more here, there may be less here, I don't know, but that I did not expect to find out that was a live bullet. I mean, that is, and how is that, because if you think about it, like, I think we're thinking like, oh well, the prop master brings his gun on, all of those props are in a prop place, like that's the kind of thing that should be like costumes. Like, you don't tell the actors, yeah, whatever you're wearing, hey, bring your own clothes in. There's a costume area, and all that stuff is provided beforehand. There's a person that's in charge of that. And I would think when it comes to any of the props, guns or swords or anything,
mm-hmm. there'd have to be a firearms expert there.
But beyond that, shouldn't there just be property of the film? Like, the prop master doesn't just show up, well, I have this gun at home, this will do.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Now, right. It's a period piece, right? It's a period piece from the 1800s. So maybe you have an old gun, because you have to be using the guns that were there in 1880, whatever this movie's being made in. Maybe that makes a little more sense, so you're getting, like, a firearms expert to come in and bring that kind of gun. It's tragic. I just don't, for the life of me, I can't understand these M&Ms.
Old-timey pretzels?
No, I'm past the old-timey pretzels. Okay. That Eric Erickson, man, he mentioned these peanut M&Ms a few days ago, and I just can't stop eating them. I don't know. It's tragic. I just don't understand how a live bullet ends up on a set like that.
A rowdy group of misfits that love to have fun.
It is hilarious. The jokes, the voices.
The Von Hessler Doctrine.
95.5 WSB, Atlanta's News and Talk.
I watched a couple of things yesterday. One, I know that the hype about this show is completely over, but I just happened to watch the first episode of that Mayor of Easttown. What a great show. Have you seen it?
I have not.
That's all I've heard is that it's really great, but it's also depressing.
It's super depressing. Can I tell you something? And I only saw the first episode. If you want to know the people that Eric and Tim knew growing up, am I right about this? I mean, New York. I was in my Western New York world. I mean, this is the world that I was a teenager.
Those are poor suburbs around a big city, right?
Just very, but I mean, just the people. Like, I know these people, good and bad. There's good people, there's bad. I mean, there was nobody that I didn't recognize in this show. And just a great, really gritty. I love 70s movies because they're sort of gritty and slice of life, and they're not all
Sidney Lumet type films.
Just like Jack Nicholson, Five Easy Pieces, stuff like that. Like, I really, this was just real human and gritty. And that Guy Pearce is great in everything that he's in. And he's like, he reminds me of Matt Dillon, the actor. He just doesn't show up in a bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, he picks and chooses, and the stuff that he's in is almost always great. That Guy Pearce was fantastic. I only saw one episode. I don't know. I'll be let down after that.
No, keep going. It's a good show, but it is very emotionally draining.
Yeah, the first episode was emotionally draining. I mean, yeah, but so real. Just like the, her ex-husband. Like, he's a good guy.
Yeah.
I know seven people that are that guy. I mean, just
should
really.
I watch it?
You should watch it. It's really, really good.
But I don't want to be sad.
A lot of the accents they do tend to sound more Baltimore-ish than Southern, Southeast PA.
See, I didn't even care. I didn't even know it was supposed to be in PA. It's like, I don't get hung up on accents because I think that sometimes the actors who do great accents are kind of over the top anyway. I mean, just do your voice. It doesn't matter to me. You don't have to sound like this or that. We had that discussion about Jojo Rabbit, you know. Johansson's German. Well, the idea of German speaking English in a German accent is ridiculous to begin with. Just go play your role.
In every British drama about the Roman Empire, they all have or British accents.
Just have your accent. Yeah. Germans don't speak English in a German accent. I mean, I guess they do if they come to America, but not when they're living in Germany.
Yeah, does it take away from the storytelling is the question.
Like the acting, Scarlett Johansson is fantastic in that movie, and people are like, oh, her accent wasn't that good.
Thanks.
That was her mistake, was that she tried to do an accent. And I watched Dune. That's the first time I've ever done that. Like, it came out at 6 o'clock on HBO Max. Boom! I was right in. That's like almost 3 hours long. Ooh. I'm not used to this stuff, you kids, with all your movies. And this is only part one. I will say, I love David Lynch. Well, you know, like, I don't watch the Marvel movies and stuff. People tell they're all 3 hours long. Like, I'm not used to that.
You were complaining about Bond being 3 hours, too.
Yeah. Part one, this is part one. And they haven't greenlit a part two, but. So I don't know how, I mean, the book is great. It's a very difficult, I love David Lynch. He even knows that his version was terrible in the 80s. So this is better than that, much better than that. I don't know, there's so much exposition that's necessary that it's still, like this guy deals with it a lot better than Lynch did. Because Lynch, it was like, okay, check that box, got that out of the way. So it's you can't get around it, that there's going to be a lot of people explaining things to another character, so they're really explaining it to you, or a character listening to something being explained, because there's so much going on. But I think they did a good job with it. I don't know how, if people didn't read the book, I have no idea if it would be fun in that way. Kind of has a Star Wars feel to it, you know, another world. It does feel like it's a different world. He's the same guy who made Blade Runner 2049. So it's same pacing, kind of the same look. If you like that, you would probably like this.
I thought that was really good.
But a lot of it is kind of dark. Like, you have the outdoor things, you know, in the kind of desert where it's all sunny. But a lot of it is very, very, very dark cinematography. So I don't know. But they're obviously, I think there's a lot of the exposition. I think the hope is that after part one, then we can come back and we can stop just explaining everything to everybody all the time, because there's just so much. I wonder if sometimes certain books, no matter how good they are ultimately kind of impossible to turn into movies. And that's usually the sign that it's a great book. Like, some of the best books I've ever read are wildly cinematic in your head, but you could never turn them into a movie. And that's usually a sign that, well, that's because it's a book. It's a great book because it can only be told in this medium, you know? So I give it thumbs up.
You finished all 3 hours last night. You
2 hours and 45 minutes.
Look at that.
Then I went to my streamer and got caught up in plays in the Braves game and landed at the bottom of the third, and things didn't look that great.
Hey, don't worry. We're going to save the city this weekend. It's going to be a good weekend.
I'm ending with reviews. I liked Dune. I don't know if you will. And Mayor of Easttown, my goodness, what a knockout. What's her name from Titanic?
Kate Winslet.
Couldn't be more opposite of the character in Titanic, and just absolutely fantastic.
She's a great actress.
I haven't seen her in anything since Titanic. So now I know.
She's great.
And those are, you want to know the people that Eric Von Hessler grew up with?
Meh.
Right there. The mean ones, the nice ones, all of them. All right, that music says that we are done for the entire week. However, we've made an executive decision to come back on Monday morning at 9 a.m. and crank up another great week of radio. You're all invited to join us, but until then, continue on your journey. Do not piss off the genie. Thanks for listening to the Von Hessler Doctrine podcast. Remember, you can hear the show every weekday from 9 to noon right here on 95.5 WSB, Atlanta's News and Talk.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.